XM Radio.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action in thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
Want to know a secret? The Massachusetts Breeding Program pays huge bonuses for finishing first, second, or third at any racetrack in the country. You didn't know that, did you? Massbreds get paid up to an additional 25% of their purse earnings for the owner, and breeder, and stallion owner, and developer. It's the best-kept secret in racing. Till now. Tell all your friends, and to learn more, visit massbreds.com.
Whether you're new to the racing game or just looking to enhance your operation, Hermitage Farm and Goshen can help you. We are conveniently located between Churchill Downs and Keeneland Racecourse and near world-renowned equine hospitals. With spacious paddocks, expert staff, and qualified veterinarians, we offer full-service boarding, breeding, and sales preparation, as well as post-operative care and layup services. Visit us in person or online at hermitagefarm.com.
Just minutes from downtown Saratoga Springs, you'll find GMP Farm, a revolutionary state-of-the-art equine therapy and rehabilitation facility offering the most advanced equipment and knowledgeable staff to care for your equine athlete. From oxygen therapy and laser treatments to thermal imaging, dry salt room, and cryotherapy treatment, all alongside a 7/8 mile Tapita training track, GMP Farm is revolutionizing equine care. To see a full list of services and book your horse's rejuvenation session, visit gmpfarm.net today.
Two-year-olds in California and Kentucky, please consider Bleeder Shield. The leading all-natural paste used to greatly reduce or eliminate EIPH. The list of trainers who trust Bleeder Shield is endless. Shouldn't you join the team? To learn more, contact Joseph Vellante at 215-501-6880.
PA Bred, I think we've built a brand at this point.
It's excitement at every step.
Roses for Deborah just set a new track record.
On average, for the past decade, Pennsylvania paid over $28 million a year in breeders' awards, restricted races, and owner bonuses. Plus, PA Bred shine on the world's biggest stage. Just three states have bred more Breeders' Cup winners. Learn more at PABred.com.
The Remington Park Thoroughbred season is in the stretch run, heading to the final night of live racing on December 13th featuring the Springboard Mile. Racing starts at 6:30 p.m. Wednesday through Saturday. Then on Friday, December 13th, the Springboard Mile will wrap up the season as two-year-olds compete for qualifying points to next year's Kentucky Derby. The first race is at 5 p.m. on Springboard Mile night, Friday, December 13th. The Remington Park Casino always features jackpot play. Visit RemingtonPark.com for group rates, suite rentals, and more. Let your heart race at Remington Park.
Horse racing fans, the Southern California Thoroughbred Racing Circuit continues in beautiful Orange County. It's the Los Alamitos Winter Thoroughbred Meet with outstanding daytime racing through Sunday, December 15th. First post is 12:30 p.m. Pacific. Our closing weekend of racing will feature a pair of outstanding stakes races. The Grade 2 $200,000 Los Alamitos Futurity will be held on Saturday with points on the line to the Kentucky Derby. Plus, Top Cal Breds will race in the King Glorious on Sunday afternoon. We'll host our on-track handicapping contest on Saturday, December 14th. You could win a seat to the National Handicapping Championship in Las Vegas. Contest format and rules are available at losalamitos.com. The card will feature the Los Alamitos Futurity, which annually features some of the top two-year-olds in Southern California. And when the sun goes down during the winter meet, the fun continues with weekend day and night doubleheaders at Los Alamitos. The daytime Thoroughbred Racing Circuit is back at Los Alamitos with outstanding racing continuing through December 15th.
I'm in the kitchen cooking. And the children upstairs asleep. It's time for old Santa Claus to make his mittens.
Albert King. Santa Claus Wants Some Love. Another one of our favorites, and it's become a favorite stop at the end of the broadcast year. Remington Park, and last year was not closing night because there was a rescheduling day to have to slip in, so there was a Saturday card, but nothing cooler than ending the meet with one of the big races on the four-month calendar at Remington. Matt Vance joins us, Springboard Mile Night. Matt, I saw you at Arizona, so it's not like I haven't seen you in a year.
Good morning, yes, saw you 2 days ago, and thanks for having me.
Not at all. And thanks for having me come here. And it's really, I told Dale yesterday, there was a long time between drinks. Right when I first got involved with the show, John Parada had something with the Oklahoma Classics night. And I came out, I was sent out here and presented the trophy for the Classic Classic and to Donnie K. Von Hemel and D. Fine Oakey. And then I wasn't back for like another 13 years. So it's really, I have come to look forward to this so much. And tonight you got a terrific card and a terrific way to end the meet with the Springboard Mile.
Wonderful card. Really kind of culminated the season, the ups and downs. And Kelly Cathy in the racing office did a great job putting this card together. Field size, top to bottom, strength.
Well, and the feature, and you and I were talking the other day, the whole program actually got a kind of a national exposure courtesy of the Clark result. I mean, how many stakes around the country this year had two winners out of a derby? You had Rock and Roll, Rattle and Roll, who won the Oklahoma Derby 2 years ago, and then Most Wanted, who won it this year, finished 1-2 in the Clark, which is sort of a grade 2 plus, almost like the Cigar Mile, races that have been grade 1s that are sort of right on the teetering on the line. So I thought that was a terrific compliment for the Oklahoma Derby.
Really was. We were very fortunate to see those horses run 1-2, and that certainly will hopefully up our chances with the Graded Stakes Committee, and maybe we'll get a nod, maybe we won't, but certainly a feather in our cap.
Well, and you look at this, you look at this Springboard Mile field, and this is, this is sort of it's one of those grade four kind of races right now that, kind of needs just one flashy three-year-old next year or the following year, whatever season, to make an impact on the Triple Crown Trail and that or one or more. But when you've got Ron Moquette showing up with the Speed King, Asmussen's always good for two or in this case three starters. Doug O'Neill shows up. I mean, and Doug has made a habit of bringing horses like Dr. Ruben M. To Sunland and here and play some of the provinces, as they say. So there could be easily a breakthrough. And then let's be honest, Lonnie Briley and Danny Pish and of course Calhoun, some of the great southeastern horsemen are well represented in here.
Very good. Yeah, a lot of local horsemen and regional horsemen supporting the race, and top to bottom looking at this, you can make an argument for, 90% of them.
You talked about, and we discussed this a little bit on Wednesday, you called it an up-and-down season. And, as what is essentially, one of the regional seasonal offerings on simulcast cards, nationwide, talk a little bit about the niche that that you look for and you hope for and how to differentiate the Remington signal. You're in that fall spot, September to December, and it's a little bit different, right? It's not. I wouldn't call it a familiar calendar.
It's definitely challenging, and the reason we got to having a fall thoroughbred season is we don't have enough time on this show to go into it, but that's the that's the lot in life we've been allocated to, and we do our best. But, you know, and looking at it like a product on the shelf, we've just got to find that right spot, the right time. This time of year, horses are, you know, it's very competitive to try to put together a field with horses that are coming and going, going up in their form and down in their form in other ways. But, you know, hopefully we can catch lightning in a bottle like we did with Senor Buscador a few years ago. So who
exactly.
won this race and, you know, has gone on to help kind of put us on the map a little bit. So no telling what we've got in this race. And but strong support from Steve, as he's always been to our entire program. Local folks, Sarah Davidson, Joe Alfalter, and again, Brett Calhoun, another strong supporter of Remington. So Danny Pish, Texas boys. Looking forward to it. And, you know, it's a promise of things that are going to come down the lane and down the road.
How much has Oaklawn's move to throw in these three December weekends, how much did it impact you?
It's impacted us as far as horse flesh. Obviously, those folks that want to run there this coming spring, they need to get their stock moved over there. And so we have a little bit of a vacuum there. But, you know, historically, we ran a spring meet against straight up heads and tails against Oaklawn for the first, probably 15 years of our existence. And I really think we complemented each other. We had horses going back and forth and competed. And we'll see some of these horses that race through here this fall do well there at Oaklawn at different levels. So, I mean, it's certainly a challenge. We've had to adjust a little bit, as all tracks do, when they've kind of moved their start back. But, you know, we've been able to rebound.
When did the turf season end?
Middle of November. We ran longer on the turf this year than we ever did. We had a great growing season, and then we were fortunate with we didn't have a lot of heavy rains. We had a few humdingers, but we were able to we didn't have to take too many off the turf. So, and you know, the turf crew, and got to give a shout out to Chris Thomas, my turf man, did a great job, always does, and. So we ran, you know, all the way into November.
And I imagine even running into November, you've got to lose horses to fairgrounds probably
sure.
at that point.
Few go to the fairgrounds, and then, you know, the rest, you know, the other turf specialists probably take a little time off and prepare for Sam Houston and Lone
right.
Star this coming spring.
Well, and Sam Houston's got their own issues with the way the Texas Racing Commission has more or less just crippled Texas racing. I mean, it's a little silly to be honest. And I suppose we're within about 6 months of things coming to a head there.
Right.
One thing that I brought up with you and just in the interim from Wednesday to knowing we were going to talk today, and because you mentioned even on Wednesday that you know that the season has had its challenges, and it just so happens I saw Jim Goodman as I was leaving yesterday from or Wednesday from Arizona, and I brought you up and I said, you know, Remington is kind of looking for, you know, some solutions and some ways to draw more attention to the signal. And, you know, the night aspect, and as you mentioned, I mean, you've over the years, you've had, you know, the kind of a shifting calendar. Talk about being a full-fledged night signal and whether, you know, whether there's room to start the card a little bit earlier and get, you know, some of that eastern half of the country simulcast money.
Like we discussed, I'm very open to, we've got to be able to pivot and move around a little bit. And those are things we're discussing. And, you know, in my heart of hearts, if I was the racing czar of Oklahoma, which I'm not, but I would rather have, you know, run in the afternoons, and then have our big nights, you know, and utilize our lights, similar to what Churchill's doing now, and use those to complement those big nights and you know, do that versus strictly 67 nights of racing. And wherever that is, if it's a matinee where we start maybe at 3 p.m. and go on until 8 or 9, or if we move it back to 1:30 or an earlier start, I'm very open to looking at that. But like everything else in corporate America, we've got to look at all the data and understand who our customer is. And certainly Jim makes a great point. It's just that shelf that you're on. And then, so, you know, a couple of weeks ago, we ran a few Monday and Tuesday daytime cards.
Yeah.
And we saw some good play. At the end of the day, we're not first and foremost in everyone's mind, because all of a sudden we're a new signal on at 1 o'clock or 2:30 on a Monday and Tuesday. But so like anything else, you've got to build that momentum. And I think we could do that at where the industry is now with simulcasting. So
how much we should talk a little bit about it's the Chickasaws?
Chickasaw Nation.
And Global Gaming. Mm-hmm. How much leeway, I mean, do you have in terms of, you know, building the, you know, the racing side?
They're very supportive of me and the team. And, you know, they rely on me as the quote-unquote expert. They're very supportive in that manner. And so it's something we can talk about. Once we come up with some plans, then, of course, then it gets dissected by the accountants and the good racing folks we have here. And, you know, we're going to make the call that we have to make.
Well, one of the things that's interesting, considering that there's a perception generally that the gaming, you know, gaming managements have little interest or regard for their racing offerings, and there's a culture of the horse, as they say, in Oklahoma, that, you know, gives you a kind of a unique perspective. And I, in fact, I brought this up. I think on Wednesday we were discussing, you know, casino, racino facilities. This is a place where the racing is fully integrated. If people are on the casino floor, they don't have to go searching for monitors, you know, to see, you know, what the next race is 8 minutes to post.
Right.
You know, plus there's the viewing stand from the racino, from the casino floor. There's a viewing stand to the racetrack, and people go out and step away, and nobody's herding them back to the machines. Management is not upset if somebody wants to go watch a race and go stand on the balcony and bet a race here. So that's a very positive scenario. I mentioned Eric Hallstrom to you, and, you know, there's Caesars. Caesars has proven that they've got high regard for the horse player and for the racing product. And Eric has got a free hand to try anything. And it's made Indy. I mean, I would think that Indy is probably something, you know, their signal and their handle growth is something that you'd love to emulate.
Sure, definitely. The casino interest in racing is, you know, they, by and large, they own a significant portion of racetracks.
Sure.
And so, you know, it's in their nature to obviously support, and their interest is going to be casino gaming, the slot machines. And you talk about margins and what racetracks make off of, whether it's HHR or you know,
straightforward table games and everything else.
Yeah. Table games. Racing's margins are very small, more similar to sports wagering. So you need to do a lot of revenue to be able to capture a profit at the end of the day. And so the casino side sees the black and white of it, There's not a lot of gray. And so, yeah, it's my job to convince them the value of what racing brings to our casino business, which in Oklahoma, without racing, we don't have our casino.
Right.
The $3.8 billion economic impact in the state of Oklahoma and the support we get from our horsemen's groups is wonderful. And the Chickasaw and Global Gaming, they're at the table every day with us, and they want to see that do better. So that's my job, and sometimes I feel like Atlas out there. But we're going to get it done, and we got some things we're working on. I can't really get into a lot, but down the road, the next couple of years, I think that you'll see hopefully a resurgence of Oklahoma horse racing.
Well, I mean, you got a nice breeding program. There's a great history of Oklahoma breds that really cuts across all equine sport disciplines and breeds. The mixed meats are a big part, right? I mean, right. You got paint, and you got you name mules. You got quarters.
No mules.
We love
no mules.
Mules
and dogs. Oklahoma,
all right, but you got quarters, and you got paints. And,
we're really the Saratoga / Del Mar of the quarter horse breed, and the Oklahoma is the Kentucky for quarter horses, biggest breeders, biggest operations, and. So our spring meet is, you know, it's exciting. It's the top of the sport, and our thoroughbreds, you know, they're not as high in the pecking order for their industry, and that's important that we do our best to get that back. Interesting, we don't want to bore you with statistics, but when Global Gaming purchased us in 2010, our maiden purses were right at about $40,000. Oakland Parks were about 42. They ran a $54,000 non-2. We ran a $46,000 non-2, $49,000 Okie bred non-2. Today, we're at about $38,000 maidens, and Oakland is
105, 110,
$100,000. They run straight, you know, yeah. Three or four $150,000 races every day. And a lot of these horses that are in our races are filling those races.
Yeah.
So it's challenging when, you know, over the years we've had Brother Browns and the Silver Goblins, Clever Trevors. If Donnie K. Von Hemel has a Clever Trevor in his barn, you know, at this time of year, is he going to point that horse to a $38,000 maiden, or is he going to say, let's just wait a few weeks for Oakland to show up? Don't blame them. Again, I go back to it's just in their nature. It's in our nature. And so the haves and the have-nots today, there's a bigger gulf separating us. And we've got to do our best to get back on a level playing field with that. And that's, unfortunately, is on my shoulders today. So,
And back to the September to December dates, it's got, you're in kind of a strange, not no man's land, but you don't, there's not really enough time for a full-fledged, you know, two-year-old program, almost. I mean, right, yeah, there's some couple of feeder races toward the springboard, right? The Clever Trevor being one of them.
Right.
But you're also on the back end of the three-year-old season where, okay, you slip in the Oklahoma Derby, but you're it's sort of a no-man's land, too, because the top three-year-olds are going to go to the Pennsylvania Derby, and you know, so you're in that yep. Indiana Derby, West Virginia Derby, Troika kind of a Iowa Derby, you know, tail end.
You mentioned the Clever Trevor. You know, the historically we've had some great horses coming out. Caleb's Posse,
yeah,
You know, at the time they were kind of unknowns, but you know, that's our, we keep our fingers crossed, but. $75,000, $100,000 purse. Today, the horsemen have a menu of, there's going to be a dozen of those races. Some of them with even less competition that they could point to and find. Makes it harder to attract horses from Churchill, as we've done historically. And so that's a challenge. We know it, and we're doing our best to. We're looking at potentially condensing some races. Taking a few of the 75s and 100s and put putting those into some other race categories. Toby Keith Stakes is one of them. It was, you know, previously the Trapeze. I think if we could make that race a little more lucrative than that, you know, that's the 2-year-old filly category going a mile, and perhaps move it to the 1st of September, then we might be able to get some. That's a category that maybe we get a win and you're in qualification and be able to do
there
that.
You go. So. There you go. Now, and you know, you mentioned Oaklawn and I mentioned Fairgrounds, and so, you know, if you've got a 2-year-old that you're expecting, you know, to aim for the LeCompte and the Risen Star and Louisiana Derby, are you going to participate?
Right.
If you're thinking about the Southwest and you know, and the Rebel and the Arkansas Derby, and not to mention that they're giving away insane money. I mean, what, the Southwest, I think, is $750 now, and the Rebel?
$800, and
Rebel's a million.
Rebel's a million, and then you have is it 1.5 for the Derby this year?
It's insane.
It's great.
Yeah, it's a bonanza, undoubtedly. Well, in the meantime, a Grade 3 designation. I've been saying this for a few seasons, even before I started coming, that the Springboard was really the you know, the highlight of the end of the 2-year-old season. And as mentioned, if you go to RemingtonPark.com pop on the racing designation, you'll get to free Equibase PPs. You got some in front of you. Matt Vance, are you free to make a selection here? I know that this is not your favorite question every year.
Well, you know, and ironically, you know, it really is. It's something that I look forward to every year, but it's the time of year when we've got these last 2 weeks is just, it's murder on everyone because of the scheduling and night racing coming off a few day races. So nobody really gets any days off the last 2 or 3 weeks. And then we have the symposium. So I haven't had the opportunity, as has been the case the last couple of years, to really study who we've gotten. And, but thankfully, Kelly Caffey, who doesn't require as much sleep as I do, has been busy putting these together. And, you know, I love the field. Ron Moquette's colt, I was fortunate enough a few years ago to see Volatile win the, I think it was the Jerkins at Saratoga, and one of the most impressive performances I've ever seen from a sprinter. And I hope he's going to become the stallion that he's certainly showing this.
Off to a good start.
Yeah, yeah. I tell you, just a long shot is the 10 horse, and it is a local yokel, Miss Sarah Davidson, but her family is entrenched in Oklahoma and Texas racing. And Medicine Dog is, he's, of course, he caught my attention. He's a Constitution out of a Carroll Prince mare. And I believe they claim this horse, for $30,000.
From his debut.
From his debut.
Pretty clever.
And so I went down to look at him in the paddock, and he's a little bitty guy. And broke his maiden, obviously, very impressively. Whether, you know, and excuses in his last two, but he's trained very well, and just as an underdog, I would, no pun intended, I would have him maybe in my trifectas and superfectas. Brian Hawk, leading owner of the meet, is been very supportive and growing. He's really done a lot of work growing his outfit and being very calculated with his breeding. And this Cosmic Code is a wonderful into mischief mare that I think she was one of his first crops. And I know Brian has turned down some serious offers on her. So I like the 11 horse there as a local favorite.
Well, and Joe Wolfalter is an institution
right
around here. And I was shocked yesterday when Dale said that this is Hawk's first owner's title.
Yeah, it is. It is. He's mostly Oklahoma breds, but done a wonderful job. He has Windstar or West Wind Farms that's down, 40 years ago in the Lexington Purcell area. That was the horse capital of the world. The Scarboroughs had horses. What I believed had the Valor Farm at that time was there. And they stood some very nice stallions there over the years. So I believe this is the same property that Brian has purchased, and along with his farm in Washington, Oklahoma. But it's nice to see that the local guys do well and have a shot in a race like this. So, and again, in Omaha Beach, and got Louis Quinones, who's certainly a legend here, been here from the beginning. You know, we were all in our 20s when this place started, and it's good to see some of us still going.
Well, two Texas breads in here. Essay for Brett Calhoun, a Thousand Words gelding, and Danny Pish has got Jolly Samurai, who's got a big shot in here. 4-1, obviously a major player, and this is a first Samurai out of a Patio Prado mare, and it might be some turf in this one's future, ultimately.
You would think.
But two Texas breads and an Oklahoma bred, and then the rest, Mr. Omaha being the Oklahoma bred. And it's absolutely a fun field. I'm going to write this up after, you know, this afternoon and put it up on our website. And
Steve Asmussen and with Stuart Elliott getting 8-1 on the morning line.
I brought this horse up yesterday. Yeah.
Don't.
Complex Music.
Complex Music.
It took a big step forward, and the horses that we talked about, the third graph figures yesterday with Jeff Franklin. And this horse has done, as we say in you know, sheep methodology, has done a lot of developing, but it kind of looks like he's a horse that needed all of those six races, and might just be one of these that needs to race into shape. He's a complexity colt out of a Malibu Moon mare, and you know, you got to trust Asmussen's judgment. That Kino would have to step forward from the outside. He's going to have to work out a trip. This is the Calumet Keen Ice homebred. And then the third Asmussen is down inside, a horse that comes in with a very modest debut figure here in the slop. But I don't know if I'd worry so much about that figure, considering he's a gun runner and might stretch out with a plum. Danny Cabrera and Blue Angel, 15-1. And one of my favorite things about Steve Asmussen, you can be laying there in bed and you put on the OTB channel and it's 10:15 on a Thursday night and there's Asmussen at Remington on the shank. It's you may have seen him the earlier in the day at Churchill, and now it's 6 hours later and he's in the paddock leading the horse around. It's unbelievable.
It is funny story. Lone Star, well, it's been 4 or 5 years ago. It's when he won the that afternoon. He'd won the Grade One Suburban, I believe, but it was 4th of July, and it was, I think, the last race on the card. I go out of the horseman's bookkeeper's office, and there's Steve in a pair of khaki shorts and Birkenstocks, flip flops, and he is schooling a Medaglia d'Oro, a $1 million colt, in the paddock. And of course, he's got his you know, the best assistants in the game around him, but he's taking the shank and he's schooling the horse. And I had just literally watched him win the Suburban, and I can't remember the horse colt's name, but I said, "Steve, what the hell are you doing here?"
It's unbelievable.
He said, "It's 4th of July. It's my family down here."
Exactly.
He said, "Lone Star Park." He said, "We love it." So, yeah, Steve's amazing. And again, I think it was 94, 95 when Steve and I are about the same age, and they let a little horse over that I told Steve. I said, "Man, that colt, I could see my reflection in his coat. He was so beautiful." And he said, "Well, I'm glad somebody around here notices good horse flesh." And that horse's name was Valid Expectations.
Oh, one of his early great successes, his first great success.
Yeah, really. Yeah, yeah. Ended up winning the Phoenix the next year at Keeneland. And
Scarborough's.
No, that was the Ackley Brothers.
Ackley Brothers. Mm-hmm. There you go. There you go.
Good people, and certainly, well, the goat of his game.
Yeah. it's a guy that not everybody understands.
No. Steve, hey, when Steve comes in the room, you know what you're getting.
That's 100% true. Well, of course, last year it was Ray Ashford, and so the locals can win this. Lonnie Briley, Cole Battle, and the Calhoun players, the Pish runners, and I guess Moquette. See, Moquette is one of these guys who can claim to be a local at both Arkansas and Oklahoma.
Our pool sizes, Steve, are going to be wonderful today for those that don't typically play tracks like Remington. So this is a classic example of a race that can really, make your day. So from a handicapping standpoint, and so I certainly love it. I haven't seen or heard of any of the scratch sheet or if we've had any late scratches, but hopefully things stay together. I couldn't ask for better weather right now, and after this, I'll be going down to the track to take measurements with my track crew and my HISA safety steward, and today's the reason that we're all here.
Matt Vance, everybody, and the season comes to a close, and it sounds like there's some things to look forward to for 2025. Matt, thanks so much.
Thank you, Steve.
Thanks for having me, and really enjoy coming. Should be a great night tonight.
I wish you and everybody listening Merry Christmas. And
100%. Perfect. Matt Vance, folks. Going to get Hammer in here, and we'll talk about, I think he's with us already, actually. Hammer?
I snuck in.
You really did, and I heard you right. I heard the tiniest little indication. And, of course, much like my conversation with Matt Vance, was with you as well in Arizona.
Yeah, long time no see, one of those.
That's right.
And so we're back. You're at Remington. I got back last Wednesday night and then went out to Santa Anita early yesterday to see a few people. And we're back here and then right back on the road again, as you are, to Kentucky. You know, every time you come on from Remington, I think, I was there. Gene and I were driving across country in the inaugural season of Remington. And I can't tell you exactly what it was, but it probably was about 30 years ago, I'm guessing-ish.
That sounds right.
And I have a poster that says inaugural season, Remington Park, hanging up somewhere. And I don't think I've been back.
Well,
because, we drive through Oklahoma probably once or twice a year, and it seems like I'm always going through there during the day. And it's been I think there was one time at night, and I said, oh, this is great. And it was a night they were running, like a Wednesday, and I thought I would hit it, and I didn't. So, yeah, I haven't been back. I have a fond memory. I can't say memories. I have a fond memory of that opening season, just everybody clean and everybody, having a good time. So I have to get back to Remington Park.
Agreed. And not just the racetrack, but you've got this whole adventure district that on either side of the racetrack and across the street with theater and museums and you name it. There's like a Christmas village thing that's over up the stretch too. It looks really kind of fun, and it'd be your kind of a visit, Hammer.
There's a zoo there too.
There's a zoo, absolutely, right?
Yeah, okay. And,
there's,
I do remember.
And we talked yesterday with Dale.
We'll get back there. So I thought, are you going to go? Are you going to Florida for the Pegasus?
Ostensibly for Eclipse, actually, for the Eclipse Awards that week. And then last year I had to come home for a family function. And I, which I think was a baby I think it was one of the grandkids' birthdays. So that may be looming at the end of January, but otherwise, yes.
So you'll be down there that week. So here I just thought, I had to think of something real quick because we have to have a wager on this game this weekend. And so I thought that we could have the winner will treat at a lunch at Le Tub.
Oh, there you go. All right. Burger sounds good. I thought Billy Stone Crab was coming, but all right. I'll take the under.
Because believe it or not, when we used to go to town down there from up north, and you knew everybody was going to be in at some point during the day, and guess where we met? We'll meet you at Le Tub for dinner, and so that's where everybody. That was our meeting ground, and the famous Le Tub. It's upgraded just a little bit, but still. The burgers haven't changed. I was there last year, I believe, and so we'll do lunch at Le Tub for the game this weekend. So I wanted to get that
done. When you come back to Oklahoma, and if it overlaps with me, we'll bring you for the most famous burger now, and the burger that's changed the course of burger history, the onion, the famous Oklahoma onion burgers. So
Was that the photo that you sent out?
Yes, that's one of the three founding cornerstones of the onion burger. Roberts, Johnny's, and that's Sid's. And starting in the Depression, and the smashing of onion, of thinly sliced onion into a meager amount of ground beef at the time. Basically to extend the meat. That's how the onion burger was conceived, and it was known locally for decades, and then the renown spread, and it's basically what every single burger joint is trying to emulate with those smashed patties. It all came from this little town just outside of Oklahoma City, El Reno.
I'm a burger guy, so
reason
enough to make the left turn there to get off the road quickly before. And I don't know if you had Johnny D on the other day.
Yeah, please, Eddie Truman.
Talking about Eddie.
Yep.
Yeah. I was in the airport at Tucson, and I met, talked to a couple other racetrackers waiting to get on their plane, and someone mentioned it to me, thinking that I already knew, and I didn't. Kind of caught me off guard. But Eddie was just a great guy. He was a friend. It's funny, everyone's kind of a friend at the racetrack, but then some are more friendly. You're with, and Eddie was that type of guy with me. We had a lot in common. Of course, he traveled a lot, and we would always share pictures or stories from where we were. In fact, as soon as I heard, I said, I can guarantee you I'm going to pull up him on my text, and you will see a picture from somewhere. And he was just a real nice guy. He was a friend. He always had a smile on his face, and he never complained about a thing. One of those guys, hey Rick, what are you doing? What are you doing, Eddie? How many stalls you need this year? I need 13. Well, guess what? He had 13 or you gave him 13 stalls. He was happy as could be. He'd come in and ask once in a while, ask for a race, and he would constantly, he'd have his bike. He'd ride his bike to work. He and his brother Jerry just, two peas in a pod, love to do things, full of energy, full of life, and it was just a shock. It's that you hear, healthy guy. Like I said, always on the road, always asking what hike you're going to go on next, and so he had phased out training over the last 3-4 years, it started getting down in numbers as many had. And I think at some point, he basically just kind of phased out and still lived in the area. I'd still talk to him. And but he, one of the good guys, Eddie Truman, he'll his smiling face will be missed around the racetracks here. And just best to his family, and just wanted to mention that.
No, I appreciate it. I knew you would, and anybody from not just the West Coast, obviously, because Johnny spent the breadth of his career out there. And when I let him know, I said, did you hear about Eddie Truman? And he hadn't. And he said, we won so many races together with Sandy Hawley. And so I wanted Johnny. I knew he would be a perfect candidate to pay tribute.
Yeah, you could have picked any name out of a hat out here.
It seems like it, right? The outpouring is just extensive.
I know it's more the shock, kind of a shock too. Like
exactly.
I said, a healthy guy. He was 70 something, but he was whatever age he was 10 years younger, type of thing.
He
was always doing, active and doing things, and always had a good story to tell. So.
Hammer. Similarly, one name we did not get a chance to, and I only mentioned it because I obviously had to, and this was not a shock because he was sick, and it was difficult. But I don't think I gave you a chance or asked you to mention Ben Cecil.
I think we talked just a smidge about Ben. I had seen Ben. He's one of the one of the first people that I got to know here when I got here, and it's just, there was a picture sent around that it was from the year 2000, I believe, 2001, my first year. There was a group of us that went to a NASCAR race, and it was like myself, Craig O'Brien, Brian Beach, Bruce Jackson, Tommy Ball, and Ben. It was like six or seven of us, and there's a classic picture of us kind of standing before the racetrack there. I always remember that. And that's how I kind of got to know him, believe it or not, after that trip. And he was just, just Ben Cecil, regular guy, one of those guys you could, goof around with, play tricks on, and, vice versa. And he had that accent, so he took a little bit of heat for that, being out here in the West. But another good guy, wonderful wife and a couple kids. And, I had seen him as much, obviously, cause I was in back and forth. And when I got out of, Santa Anita, I wasn't around as much, and I had seen him probably within the last couple of months of his life. And we talked briefly and then got the word there. And, he was sick at the end, but anytime you hear, when you're on the racetrack, you see these people every day of your life,
yeah.
And so, obviously some you connect with more than others, but Benny was kind of there and thereabouts, always, never, we would get into a stall discussion every once in a while, which you, unfortunately, like I always say, the worst part of the job is doing a stall thing, because you have to be fair. It doesn't matter who it is. And we would get into a little bit of a discussion every once in a while, but that was the business part of it. And then after that, it was back to being friends again. So another good guy, Ben Cecil. And we had some yucks about him, a few weeks ago we were talking about it, but I'll send you that picture too. And
cool.
It's pretty funny. It's not for publication. I'm the goofiest looking guy in there. I got a tie-dye shirt on and shorts, and it's my first NASCAR race, and I didn't know you got to be all geared up, and it's pretty funny. But that kind of started things out, but just another loss to the game. And like I said, to his family too as well.
Hammer, we got the Futurity at Los Al.
Yeah. And no shock. Here with no shock meaning, just look at the field. It's small as it usually is, and Baffert, who's won 8 of the last 10 of these, stepping in and gaming the runner up in the BC Juvenile here is aptly pegged at 2-5, and Pratt, who seems to be popping on a lot of horses at the right time. Now he was on this horse when he broke the, or excuse me, he won the Del Mar Futurity too. So it wasn't like he was doing something new, but he's still trying to increase his stake wins and graded stake wins. So he's aptly, like I said, 2-5 is the right. Is the right number for him. I Bob has this getaway car who looks probably second best on paper, but maybe Michael McCarthy, who's he's, you know, taken down his share of stakes out here in the last 6 months. So he's got Journalism for Bridlewood and Eclipse, and maybe that horse sneaks in and can pick up a place event. But five horses and three of them are Baffert, and that's, you know, when you win a majority of the maiden races in a circuit, then you don't have a whole lot of other people to run against, and it's just kind of the way it is. Probably going to be that way for the foreseeable future, to tell you the truth. But on that, on another note, looking forward to Santa Anita opening, and it's coming up quicker than you think. 2 weeks from yesterday, first day of entries will be a 1 week from yesterday, with the Malibu, which, you know, just was over there yesterday looking at some of the nominations. You know, Mystic Dan has indicated he's heading this way. Stronghold, the Santa Anita Derby winner, Benternado, Jose D'Angelo, I believe the horse is already on the ground. These are some of the nominations. Raging Torrent, who won the Pat O'Brien down at Del Mar, I think, upset the big horse. Eagle's Flight is nominated, so we'll see. A couple of nice nominations, the La Brea and the American Oaks. Also, I think Cherie DeVoe is heading west with her nice filly, a nice turf filly. So we'll plan to see a lot of nice horses, especially on opening day, and also plan, if you're here, to get your Santa Anita calendar. And if you can't make the races, of course, we're doing I keep saying 15 years, so it's at least 15 years we've been giving away the calendar here on the show. And Santa Anita calendar, or Santa Anita's once again putting them up. So here's what we're asking you to do this year. Anyone who would enjoy a Santa Anita calendar sent right to them, please send in a photo of a sunset. Pretty easy, right? If you don't have one, stay up a little later tonight and go out and get a sunset. And right, send it in to a couple comments of the show, and then send me your through email. Send it to santaanitacalendar@yahoo.com. Include the photo, include a couple content, and please include your address. And we're about halfway through our allotted amount, so get them in. And popular event. A lot of people. It's funny, Steve. I'll look on these and I'll see it. The names will pop out as after all these years, remembering them. And I remember the dough. This lady's from Illinois, or this guy's from Minnesota. And it is. I think I 4 or 5 years ago, I think I wrote it down. I think we got to 37 different states people sending in. So that's. And not all of them were states with racetracks, so it's great to hear the people listening in from all over. But we're happy to do it, and I look up. We're due to go get the tree today, get everything done. Nice. Luckily, I put the decorations up before all this travel, so I'm kind of out of the doghouse for that. But I got to go get the tree today, and we'll be all set.
Nice, very nice, Hammer. I appreciate it, and thanks for a fun 3 days. We had a very strong, 9 hours at symposium, and we will close
almost
out the year next
hours.
Week. Yeah, that's right, 8 hours and 40 minutes, or whatever it was.
great. So we got one more week, and we'll tie a little bow around 2024, and always great to be with you, and always great to be in Arizona. So. Enjoy, everybody. We'll see everybody at the races tonight. We'll see everybody at the races.
Absolutely. Here at Remington Park, spring Springboard Mile. Going to turn our attention to Gulfstream as well, and get not going to have a full conversation with Mike Welch, but we are certainly going to get his analysis of this Tropical Park Oaks, which Mike, I mean, it's so crazy how a race like this just pops up out of nowhere.
Well, you know, it's the last three-year-old stake of the year for the Phillies, last chance to get stakes brackets against their own kind before having to, you know, tread in deeper waters in a few weeks and going up against the older and more seasoned horses. So, you know, it drew a full field, and fortunately, there's a lot of good filly, three-year-old fillies hanging around here at this time of the year, you know, and ready to take advantage of the opportunity. I mean, the colt race didn't come up quite as strong top to bottom, but, it, you know, we also got 12 in there and a couple of AEs, full field for the same reasons. But the filly race, from a handicapping standpoint, it's a real head-scratcher. A lot of question marks in there.
We'll get a chance to see a Clocker report yet or no?
Saturday's report is just about ready to come out.
Okay.
We should have it later this afternoon. I'm still finishing it up, but there's a lot to report on this card. It's taken a while to get everything loaded up and in, but it's about done now.
Very good. Well, I'm anxious to see it too, because this race is irresistible, and I'll be handicapping some other things, but I'll certainly do this as a standalone. And in fact, Marcus Hirsch made it one of his three races for game plan, and he and I actually landed on the same horse, Mike. I'm very interested in Random Harvest of Jimmy Toner's. That I don't know if she's going to be 10-1. I know, you know, you headed in the direction of Safi Joseph within our time. I had Todd this week, and we talked about Life's an Audible, who's coming back in this spot. What lay out this race from your perspective?
Yeah, I mean, all those horses are definitely in the mix, and it'll be interesting to see how the public is gonna perceive the race and who's gonna ultimately wind up the favorite. I see Brian made See You Around for Christophe Clement, the morning line favorite. A little bit of a head scratcher for me there, other than the fact that he's got IRAD on him, and you know, when in doubt, lean toward whoever IRAD rides in any of these races, because it always chops the ultimate price down to a point or two. You know, that horse has made only one start in the U.S., and even running sixth in the Pebbles, the Grade 3 Pebbles, likely going to need a race. I mean, got benefit from that race, likely needed that race. I could see him being one of the contenders as well. I'm not sure he's going to be the favorite. The reason I picked Safi's horse is kind of a pace play. I mean, there's really no pace in this race. Unfortunately for her, she's got to break from the extreme outside in post 12, so she better leave running. But I think if she does, I mean, she just might clear off and get loose in here.
Huh.
She's coming off the best race of her career, and that was prompting the pace before drawing off pretty impressively over a couple of her rivals in this race, not the key rivals, but, you know, beating some stakes caliber horses in that spot as well. She appears to be getting better and better, and I think if she can get loose, you know, she might be tough to catch. The big question marks, I mean, and again, Random Harvest is one of them. So telling how good she can be. She's obviously going to have to improve a little bit from a numbers standpoint. She's also giving away a lot of experience. So she might not be 10-1, but I think she'll be somewhere in the 6-8-1 range just because of her lack of experience. The big question marks here, though, are both Life's an Audible and Waskesu for Bill Mott, neither of whom have run since March. So they are coming off long layoffs, although obviously both these trainers know how to have one ready, especially a good horse ready off the bench. I mean, Life's an Audible won the Swedish Chance, just got beaten. Here Comes the Bride, second in the Ginger Brew. In the morning, just been working. Yeah, kind of maintenance-like works on the main track. Todd has had her here, not at Palm Beach Downs, and there is no turf course to work on at Gulfstream. She did not avail herself of the Tapeta, so just kind of in maintenance mode there, getting ready for this spot. And Waskesu has not been seen since winning the Grade 3 Florida Oaks. That was one of the key races at any track, anywhere in 2000 and 24, five horses from that field came back and won their next starts. And that's a group that included the winner of the Edgewood Stakes, the Grade Two Edgewood Stakes. And I'm scratching my head here. Dynamic Pricing was one of the beaten horses in there. So Waskasoo obviously has some quality about it. We'll just see how ready she is off the bench. So right there, there's four. Bella Wrights, who's training well for Shug, stepping up a little bit again off an allowance second last time, but has really looked good working on the main track here too, so I wouldn't ignore her either, and she's going to be a big price as well.
It's a fabulous race. Goes as the 8th, 3:53 Eastern post time for the Tropical Park Oaks. The boys' race closes things out. You pretty much are looking to the logical Silent Heart and Live High, Live Low and Cugino. A couple of prices, Mike, before I let you go. I do see that you also picked Lynchy in that 7th race maiden group, Ain't No Disco, who's 6-1. And I asked Todd about Freaky the other day, Tuesday, and when we were in Arizona, comes back in this spot, stretching out, going to the mile, Freaky in the 9th, who's 10-1. So you like some prices in the two maiden races.
Well, you talked to Todd. I didn't, and I picked Freaky. I don't know what Todd told you, but I like the blinkers on. I like the fact that he's had a mile in the 16th race under his belt. Didn't run great in there, but did get in a little bit of trouble in that one. And he's also been working lately with Grand Sonata, who's a Grade Two winning old
sure.
grass horse and holding his own in the morning. And that is in the Clocker report, so I'll give away a little hint there. So putting all that together, I just took a shot in here with Freaky. Todd's got another one, too. The Vasimo seems to be working okay. He's the morning line favorite. You might get a little bit of a line on him by seeing how his stablemate Majorca runs in the 7th race, because they were workmates coming into these races. So I think Racing Driver in that race is a little bit sneaky, coming off a big work. Rapture, a question mark for me. Brad Cox has some 2-year-olds down here, he told me, getting ready for the, you know, that he's getting ready at Payson Park. This is one of them. We don't have any real clues on what's going on at Payson. So we'll have to see. We'll see what the board says. But I think Freaky is going to outrun his odds. Maybe he won't be quite 10-1, but I think you're going to get a little price on.
Very nice. Well, Mike, the winter season kind of really pulling out of the station a little earlier. You wrote about that the winter season got started. We'll start to check in on a more regular basis. I appreciate it.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I mean, we got some real talented horses down here this winter. Sappy obviously has White Abarrio training here at Gulfstream. He's also got Sullivan Angel, the Breeders' Cup filly and mare sprint winner, who will get back on the work tab supposedly Sunday. And she's going to run here in a few weeks. So Mufasa is here training at Gulfstream Park. I'm going to guess for the Mr. Prospector, also coming out of the Breeders' Cup. And, scattered about, too, Bet Donato is already in California getting ready for the Malibu, and maybe a chance to even become Eclipse Award winner if he were to win that race impressively enough to close out his season after finishing second in the Breeders' Cup sprint. So a lot of talent down here this winter. And looking forward to see how things play out. The Pegasus, obviously, and the Florida Derby, the two big events on the calendar, as always.
And, of course, talent up in the Clocker stand and the Clocker report that will guide you through the winter season at Gulfstream, along with you got everywhere covered. You got Payson covered this winter?
No, unfortunately, we do not.
No?
We never have Payson
okay.
covered. It's just
yeah.
too hard to get out there. It is a private training center, too, so you have to really get permission to have a Clocker up there. But it's just too hard. There's just not enough Clockers available that could handle that kind of assignment. Yeah, in the past, XBTV has helped us out, son, by getting the camera up there on key weekends. They have not I think they've only been up there one time so far. There is some logistic problems with they're having too, so hopefully they'll have a bigger presence there as we get closer to the bigger races later in the year to help us out. But we have everything else covered.
Nice.
Palm Beach Downs, obviously, Todd and George Weaver, Payson, Palm Meadows, and of course the Gulfstream.
DRF Welch, everybody. Mike, thanks so much.
Looking forward to seeing you later.
You bet. You bet. Mike Welch, folks, close it out with this morning. We've got about 5 minutes to spend with Nick Tamaro, which should be just enough. We got the two interesting Stallion Series races. I'll tell you that, of course, we've got cross-country opportunities today, tomorrow, Sunday with Oaklawn. Today, if you're keeping track, Oaklawn 5th, 6th, and 7th with the Aqueduct 8th and 9th. So you can think about that. And here's Nick now. Good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How are you?
Good. Just enough time to get you in here for a couple of ideas, a couple of opinions. And I just am seeing, by the way, I'm going to give everybody a little sad note. Word has come that Lemon Drop Kid, it's funny, I brought up Scotty Schillhofer this week, and here's LDK, has passed at the age of 28. So I imagine next week we'll find Randy Schillhofer and maybe Jose Santos and talk about Mrs. Vance's wonderful Lemon Drop Kid, a personal favorite. Nick, what do you like? What do we like this weekend?
Yeah, the Stallion Series races actually came up excellent. The 8th tomorrow is the New York Stallion Series, $500,000, so obviously a lot of money on the table. And you know, this is a really interesting matchup between Sacrosanct and Bold Fortune, both of whom, Sacrosanct's undefeated and is part of just a barrage of winners that Brad Cox has had at Nairo over the last 6 months or so. He was a little dressed up coming out of the Bonger, came back and was a little bit more workmanlike in winning the Sleepy Hollow, but looks like a fast horse and one that's certainly capable of sitting a little bit off the pace. Bold Fortune was dressed up from being on a gold rail two starts back, but came back and won right back at Finger Lakes, and is a horse with a lot of talent, clearly. So a little interesting to see Steve Asmussen send up a horse from Remington that broke his maiden against Open Company last time out, but he is by looking at Lee and is a New York Stallion eligible. So, I don't know if I have an alternative, really, Steve. I want to be kind of a wise ass and pick Soon to Be King, but I think Sacrosanct is probably better than these horses. I'm not fully sold, though. It seems like these are the kind of races Brad Cox just wins. But this horse has had some soft trips. He's not going to get one here inside with a lot of speed signed up. So I think you want to be a little critical of him. I could see maybe being a little support for Man in Finance, who's now drawn outside after getting the rail in the notebook and failing at 3-2. He was a really impressive debut winner over Kenny B, who came right back to win and then ran second in that notebook. So he's a horse who I think could step forward. And yeah, so it's a little bit more competitive than just those top two. I don't want to kind of just serve it up to them. The silly half of it is a lot of horses that are glad to not see With the Angels, right? Hmm. There's a lot of horses in here that have been beaten by With the Angels. And then you have Idle Gossip, who's run against males a couple times. But this race looks like Boston's Finest should be the favorite. She broke her maiden second out at Belmont at the Big A. It was a little workmanlike that day, but came back and ran fine in the Maid of the Mist behind With the Angels. We've got some interesting debut winners in here, though, that you probably want to pay a little attention to. The one in here is a storm changer for Demetrios Sinefius, who came way out of it to win at 11-1. Got out of the gate poorly that day and really put it all together late. I should say recent maiden winners, not necessarily debut winners. And Stone Smuggler on the outside looks like a logical horse as well. Worked sharply off a third place finish in the Key Sense after a good race up at Finger as well. So those are two really fun races. I mean, I think you're going to have to cast a relatively wide net over the Philly race. I think you can probably lean to some extent on Sacrosanct, but I'm going to definitely use Soon to Be King as well, who I'll probably hope can run him down late. The mile and an eighth nightcap is really difficult, and one where I think you're going to be hard-pressed to find a bit of a strong opinion, especially when a horse like Very Satisfactory would likely be one of the favorites, and he's had a million opportunities. So I thought Just Be Honest might be worth a look on the stretch out for Jimmy Ryerson. I like Jimmy Ryerson. This horse is going to be a good price. Christopher Elliott's getting on board, so you get a weight break. Being forwardly placed at a mile and an eighth is always a good thing at Aqueduct. So a race, I think, where you can certainly find a little bit of value, too, and a very, very fun sequence.
For those looking to play the cross country tomorrow, it's the two Stallion Series races, the 8th and the 9th, and then kind of an unusual combination at Oaklawn of the 5th, 6th, and 10th, which is a Arkansas-bred non-winners of two lifetime for 20, a 16 claimer going short, and then a first-level allowance, which is kind of a co-feature, actually.
So I actually show it as the Oakland 5th and 6th. I got Aqueduct 8th, 9th, 10th, Oakland 5th and 6th.
Oh, that's okay. So that makes, you know what? Thank you, because that makes more sense.
Well, they do a great job hiding the info on this wager.
There we go. So there we go. 5, 6, and 8, 9, 10. Very good. All right, so you gave us the 8, 9, 10, and we'll let the Arkies, let the Arkie people figure out the 5th and 6th.
Probably the best move there.
Nick, I appreciate it. We'll close out the broadcast year next week.
Sounds great, my friend. Good luck this weekend.
NTAM 1215, everybody. Nick Tamaro. Thanks to Nick and Mike Welch. Matt Vance was here, which is great. And, of course, we had the pair of KKs. Four Kings, KK, KK. Kevin Kilroy, Kevin Kirstein. And Scully, of course, rolled through as well. So there's your... That was a full house. We had three Arizonas and two Oklahomas. We'll head home tomorrow. I'll work on this Remington action and post, all right? And archive up and not too long. And stream, etc. When Brian gets a minute and does some post-production. Thanks to everybody at the University of Arizona and here at Remington for the hospitality and having me here. Thanks, everybody. Talk to you Monday. Be home to close out 2024.